Blog Talk Radio.
Saturday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you're listening to The Ooze with your host, Avenger Satanus, and the Beast.
Hey, thanks for tuning in today. I'm Beast Zeno, and this is my co-host, Avenger Satanus. How you doing today, Avenger?
Good. I like the intro at the end where it's like, and the Beast. Cool.
I had a lot of fun making that when I did.
Yeah,
one of those
I remember we were coming up with intro ideas, and you're like, I can put together something. And I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, go for it. And then you did, and I was like, oh, yeah, that's pretty awesome. I think I had a couple suggestions about the intro music, like to shorten it down, cut it down a little bit. And then.
Right, yeah, I did have a longer musical entrance at first.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm good. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing good now that I've got 4 hours of relentless monotony out of the way.
That's a good thing to have out of the way, yeah. As awesome as relentless monotony is, it can sometimes get boring.
Yeah, you can imagine.
It's hard, but somehow I can put myself in those shoes. So today's topic is about Thomas Ligotti, which I know, First Priest of Relais, Bizzino, you're not overly familiar with. Certainly you know a little bit about Ligotti just from listening to me talk about him. And you've heard a couple things and maybe read a story or two. But have you read a story or two, or is it all like just for me?
It's actually, I have read a story. I don't remember what the name of the story was, and
okay.
It was long ago.
Oh, okay.
So it's not very fresh into my mind. And I actually first heard you use the name Thomas Ligotti. I knew I'd heard it somewhere before, but I couldn't quite remember.
Okay.
And so I just never have gotten back to exploring it the rest of the way.
Yeah.
So you
what's that?
Oh, you're undoubtedly the expert today.
Yeah, I conducted an interview with Thomas Ligotti. A while ago, probably a couple years ago, and that's up on the website, which, by the way, is kind of brand new because it looks completely different. And it sort of operates completely different. A lot of the same content, but there is new content, and some things have been updated and changed around. But the whole look of the website, you know, the aesthetics, the navigation, and everything is different. So go to cultofcthulhu.net, and also let me know. Give me your feedback. It doesn't always have to be good. I mean, if you think it's shitty, then tell me it's shitty. I like to know what people are thinking. But anyway, there's a Thomas Ligotti interview up on the website, too, in the interview section. There's also Paul Carrick, the Cthulhu Mythos artist. He's interviewed by me. And then sometime next week, I'm going to send Zandora LaVey Partridge more interview questions because, again, about 2 years back, I did a little interview with her, just a simple 9-question thing. That she liked, and she links back to it and gets people to, you know, read that stuff. And that was on the old blog, which I had taken down and destroyed because it sucked. So now I'm going to do a new interview with her, and that's going to be up on the site eventually, too. So that's going to be cool.
Awesome. So why don't you tell me a little bit about Mr. Ligotti?
Okay. Unlike Lovecraft, Thomas Ligotti is still alive, which is good. He just came out with a new book, which is actually nonfiction. It's called The Conspiracy Against the Human Race. And it's basically a treatise of nihilistic philosophy and uber pessimism and basically the futility of man. And he has another phrase, malignantly useless. That's, in his estimation, what mankind is fundamentally, malignantly useless. That reality and the universe are, I guess, evil and hostile to man and to really all life, and that life is better extinguished than nurtured or, you know, feeling grateful for. So in some small ways, this kind of falls in line with the Cthulhu cult's paradigm, with our own philosophy. But rather than be all depressed about the fact that the universe actively tries to shit on everybody, you know, we struggle against it. Whereas Ligotti's like, well, everything sucks, so let's just kind of be miserable together and try to get through this piece of crap as painlessly as possible. So it's kind of a totally different approach, but I guess it starts out with the same seed of, like, you know, the universe sucks, is hostile to mankind, and doesn't
sure. That sounds to me more like it's a pessimistic look at the realistic aspect that man is but a speck on the great wall of life.
Exactly. Yep. That's exactly what it is. It's a very pessimistic outlook on. It's kind of a defeatist attitude to the main central problems that face man, whereas the cult kind of takes a more positive, you know, proactive approach. Like, well,
sure, I mean,
so let's fight it instead of just giving up and trying to serve out our sentence, you know,
sure,
without getting ass raped or beaten up every day.
Right. Well, I mean, our philosophy in the cult, obviously, it's all about personal transformation and transformation of yourself. And
right.
I mean, coincidentally, one of the best features of the new website is the transformation that it had actually undergone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the first version was excellent. There really wasn't anything really wrong with it, except for a couple of minor navigational issues.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, we needed something certainly that was, you know, symbolic of the type of transformation that we've been trying to inspire in people.
Right. Yeah, I just think,
and
after that many years, you just outgrew the old website, and it was just time for something different. And we've evolved in the last 5 years, yeah, why not have a website that reflects those kind of changes?
Absolutely. So back to Ligotti, is there anything in particular that Ligotti has written that sticks out in your mind?
Absolutely nothing. No, I'm joking. Yeah, he's got a lot of different, just great stories. I remember in high school buying this huge, giant compilation book called The Nightmare Factory. And all the stories were by Thomas Ligotti. And there were so many, like 30 different stories. And some of them were quite long. And I love that. And I still have that paperback somewhere. It went out of print many years ago. But there's other editions, too. I don't know if I can just pick one story. There's so many good ones. Yeah, just so many good ones. If someone wants, like, an introduction to Ligotti, I don't know. Really, anything is good. yeah, there's just so many good ones that... oh, there's one story that one of his earliest ones that got turned into a short film, which I've seen, and is also good. And that is... oh, crap. I'm blanking. hang on. I've got the book where that story is, and it's The Frolic.
That's the Frolic. I like the sound of that.
Dude, you would love the story. Basically, The Frolic is about the main character who works at like an insane asylum, especially for like, you know, criminals and stuff like that. And he's got a wife and a child. And he basically talks to his wife after work one day about all the different qualities and aspects of this one particular inmate, who talks about going frolicking with children. And it gets into, you know, it kind of goes from Silence of the Lambs type, like, weird, creepy, intelligent Hannibal Lecter thing into something more gothic and supernatural and just plain weird. In fact, this story has been quoted a couple times just because it has a few really excellent passages. I'm just going to try to locate them here. But yeah, the movie is good. Last time I heard, they were going to take that short film, which you can buy on DVD, and they've taken to festivals, film festivals, and they're going to try to get funding to make like a feature-length version of that, which would be fucking awesome.
Yeah, it sounds like it. I'll definitely have to read that story, and in the future, the next time we go after this topic, we'll have to go back and check out my thoughts on it.
What else?
Go ahead.
As long as we're talking about it, let me just... okay. There's actually quite a poetic geography to his interior dreamland, as he describes it. He talked about a place that sounded like the back alleys of some cosmic slum, an interdimensional dead end, which might be an indication of a ghetto upbringing in Doe's past. That's the name of the inmate, John Doe, because they don't really have a name for him. And
right.
If so, his insanity has transformed these ghetto memories into a realm that crossbreeds a banal street corner reality with a psychopath's paradise. This is where he does his frolicking with what he calls his awestruck company. The place possibly being an abandoned building or even an accommodating sewer. I say this based on his repeated mentioning of the Jolly River of Refuse and the Jagged Heaps of Shadows, which are certainly mad transmutations of a literal wasteland. Less fathomable are his memories of a moonlit corridor where mirrors scream and laugh, dark peaks of some kind that won't remain still, a stairway that's broken in a very strange way, though this last one fits in with the background of a dilapidated slum.
Hmm.
So, it goes on, and it's so fucking awesome from start to finish that, yeah, I highly recommend. He's right. It's like H.P. Lovecraft, but slightly different take on, like, the whole cosmic horror thing, whereas Lovecraft wrote in a much larger sense to begin with and then kind of personalized it through his characters, like... experiencing the horrors of, you know, Yog-Sothoth or, you know, crazy shit. Thomas Ligotti works on kind of a smaller scale where it starts out more personal and then it just kind of grows and gravitates to, you know, outward into new dimensions, and it's just, I don't know. Yeah, his work is fantastic. He's after Lovecraft, he's probably my number one favorite fiction author.
One of the lines in that little passage that you just read to us was about mirrors screaming and laughing, was it? The indication of that, well, at least through my perception of it, is the person looking into the mirror, is beyond terrified. They're actually maddened by their own introspect. And the suggestion of it alone is, I don't know, there's just something about that line, that one particular line that you read, that really just kind of hit home, so to speak.
Yeah, where mirrors scream and laugh. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, in my mind, I'm picturing something in the element of what you would have seen in the future portion of that movie 12 Monkeys.
Mm-hmm.
Where they're, everybody's like boxed in these cages and they can't go up and into the surface because the surface is contaminated, or at least I think it's contaminated.
Right.
I'm just imagining what kind of condition would a man's mind have to exist in to have that kind of introspect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
where mirrors slap, scream and laugh.
Yeah, it definitely speaks of insanity. Someone being unbalanced or unhinged or seeing things that, man wasn't meant to know. It's very suggestive. I got two more things that, before we're done with the show, I want to read. I'll start out with another one and then we'll talk more and then I'll probably finish with the last. Okay, this is from a little zine, but this story is also in one of his different collections called The Prodigy of Dreams. Let me start this passage. Okay. Later, he became a student of the imaginary lands hypothesized by legends and theologies. And he had sojourned in places which concealed or suggested unknown orders of existences. Among the volumes in his library were several of his own authorship, biographical shadows of his lifetime obsessions. His body of works included such titles as In the Margins of Paradise, The Forgotten Universe of the Vikoi, and The Secret Gods and Other Studies. For many feverish years, he was burdened with a sensation, an ancient one to be sure, that the incredible sprawl of human history was yet no more than a pathetically partial record of an infinitely vast and shadowed chronicle of universal metamorphosis. How much greater, then, was this feeling that his own pathetic history formed a practically invisible fragment of what itself was merely an obscure splinter of the infinite. Somehow he needed to incarcerate himself from this dungeon cell to which he had been condemned. In the end, however, he broke beneath the weight of his aspirations. And as the years passed, the only mystery which seemed worthy of his interest and to his amazement was that unknown day which would inaugurate his personal eternity, that incredible day on which the sun simply would not rise and forever would begin.
Hmm.
What do you think of that?
Interesting. Oh, I've got a lot of thoughts on it. Obviously, I'm outside of the actual contrast of the story to really be able to give a comparative analysis of it. But it sounds to me like, it's kind of a reconfirmation of the protagonist that his existence is minuscule and worthless, and he's kind of standing at the dawn of this understanding.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What's more probably important here is what it means to you. So.
Well, again, it kind of speaks of, like, larger than life, the mysteries and entities and different orders going on and different perspectives and something totally cosmic and alien and above man that's either directing things or, you know, even just a possible vantage point for the audience to, you know, glimpse the infinite or, you know, the mind of or consciousness of God or, you know, various worlds and all they have to offer. So it's just very larger than life, very fantastical. I also love Ligotti's use of language. I think just as a writer, he's very brilliant. And
well, there's certainly a certain elegance that can be quickly grasped about his writing style.
Yeah.
I personally, I think everything that I've heard and the reviews that I've gotten, I mean, he's definitely a deep thinker. He spends a lot of time examining, cross-examining. I would even venture to say that he might actually have some, I don't know, hidden paranoia.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, he's like a paranoia wet dream or something. He's clinically, well, probably both manic depressive, but also, he's like a paranoid schizophrenic in some ways as well, I think. He's definitely got mental problems, and he takes copious amounts of medication to try to normalize himself. And even then, he's just very, you know, down and pessimistic and nihilistic about things. So, I mean, that infuses, like, all of his prose and, you know, it gives another level or another layer of understanding to his work, which is, I mean, it's too bad on one hand because, you know, no one should feel tortured in their life or in their existence. But on the other hand, no other writing is quite like Ligotti's. So
right.
I'm grateful to have.
Well, I would say it's indicative of reality. You know,
yeah.
But, even with its pessimistic nature, his perception of what's really going on is definitely sound.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of esoteric ideas going on. He frequently talks about religions and philosophies, different cults and sects, and, you know, he'll talk about magic and the supernatural and other gothic tropes and, you know, he'll talk about killers and write about, I don't know, different things. So it's kind of like Edgar Allan Poe meets H.P. Lovecraft in like the Twilight Zone. That, you know, that's kind of the best how I can describe Thomas Ligotti's writing.
Well, what's his background like? Do you know much about his background?
He grew up in the 70s. Was very fond of like booze and drugs and kind of liked to escape from reality in that way. And then after a while, he started to get the more he indulged in drink and drugs, he started to get these panic attacks that would just last and wouldn't leave, and I guess still haunt him. Although, like I said, he takes medication for all that stuff now. And the only escape after you know, after he quit substances and substance abuse was literature and writing, both reading H.P. Lovecraft and other writers like Nabokov and such, but writing too. And I think he picked up writing fairly late in life, but, you know, obviously he has a gift for it, and he just kept writing in small zines and different, like, presses that would have weird tales, horror stories and stuff.
Need to pick up a check.
He just kept writing, you know, primarily short stories, and kept working at that as craft for a while, and
pick up a check.
Right. And
then finally, you know, he wrote The Conspiracy Against the Human Race, his nonfiction philosophical work, and I think he's back to writing short stories, but he hasn't published any new ones yet. And I guess that's it. I mean, that's, you know, he keeps a pretty private existence.
Thank you.
He used to live in Detroit, and now he lives in Florida.
So was he originally from the Detroit area?
Yeah, I believe so.
So that explains his whole attitude on life then. I actually, the first 11 years of my life were spent outside a city called Toledo in Ohio, which is about 40 minutes south of Detroit. And so I've had some experience with Detroit, and you either love it or you absolutely hate it.
Yeah, that's probably his kind of reaction. I think he didn't really care for it, but I think he probably hated it. But at the same time, he found sort of a magical appreciation for things that were decrepit and run down, crumbling, and just the decay and the neglect. So, I mean, he includes a lot of that, and especially the early stories, which have a lot of flavor for sure.
Right.
And things like that.
So
okay.
We
oh.
should throw out the call-in number.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I kind of gave up hope of people calling in. But, yeah, that's a good idea. Call-in number 347-989-1371. So if you want to come out on the news and talk about Thomas Ligotti or your favorite story or something you like, or some little tidbit of information about Ligotti that you know and we haven't covered. In the meantime, let me read that last thing of Ligotti that I'm going to say.
Sounds good.
A very short story that I've never seen in any other collection besides Crypt of Cthulhu number 68. The Crypt of Cthulhu was like a little tiny zine edited by Robert M. Price, a Lovecraft scholar and author. And, I've never seen it reprinted ever. But it's a brilliant, brilliant, very short story. And I'll read it now. It's called 10 Steps to Thin Mountain by Thomas Ligotti. 1. One day I saw it on a very old map, Thin Mountain. No elevation was noted. In my mind, vague images began to form. I set the map aside and closed my eyes. Then there was a sudden commotion, the kind that may start up any place, whether on a train rocking along its tracks or just an old bench somewhere. A group of people ran by, waving their arms and making odd noises. What was it that suddenly made me reach for the old map, only to find it was gone? And I just sat there wondering what things were really like on Thin Mountain. 2. No one knows all the legends inspired by Thin Mountain, but here are a few I've recently picked up. That the air up there will turn you into a raving visionary in a matter of hours. That after a few days you experience strange yearnings that are impossible to fulfill. That longtime residents become immortal and after death walk the woods as skeletons. What can you expect from hearsay? Well, one thing is certain among these conjectures. No one wants to give Thin Mountain a chance. 3. Only one way to Thin Mountain, absolute madness. By this I mean to put forth no clever insight. To be at eye level with the world clearly leads straight to nowhere. On the other hand, once your gaze slips off the horizontal, everything else goes with it. That is to say, no one can any longer vouch for your sanity. You have become wayward. A grinning dwarf beckons you from the ledge of a tall building. Gargoyles perched on cathedral angles, their snouts in a certain direction. And before you know it, you're lying around on Thin Mountain. 4. Not all that I've discovered about Thin Mountain is pleasant. Despite a great deal of picturesque scenery, floating strands of mists, narrow trees, fabulous finger-like peaks, this region contains more than a few perils. One of them is a solitude fit only for fanatics of exile, their eyes always draining the distances. Another is a wind which seems to be composed of countless tiny voices, the chattering populace of an invisible universe, the half-lit days and the sorcery of its nights, moments in which nothing moves and others in which everything does. But what else would you expect from a place called Thin Mountain? 5. Once I heard the words Thin Mountain spoken in a crowd. Did I say that I saw who said it? I did not. It could have been anyone standing along the platform, waiting for the train to arrive. The same day someone threw himself under that train, he was cut in half. But what a happy expression was plastered on the face of that corpse. Thin Mountain. I couldn't help crying out in front of everyone. But as I suspected, no one came forward to confront me. 6. Not once, but 1,000 times, I wished to dwell forever on Thin Mountain, even at the price of my life or my sanity. No happiness, except on those peaks. 7. One morning I awoke with great difficulty, and the pain, the noise, was worse than ever. All day the pain, the noise. All day Thin Mountain. 8. Nothing secret, I now realize, concerning the existence of Thin Mountain. It seems everyone has known about it all along. I hear them discussing it everywhere. Oh, Thin Mountain. Yes, Thin Mountain, certainly. 9. On Thin Mountain, no one talks about Thin Mountain. 10. The train will be here soon.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really cool. And for whatever reason, towards the end of it, I started to get this kind of Fight Club vibe from it.
Well, yeah, there was that line that I believe that story came out years before Fight Club that, you know, no one talks about Thin Mountain. But on another scale, there's something more about Fight Club to it as well. It's a totally different experience, like orders of magnitude different than our normal experience. And it's very nihilistic at the same time. You know, giving yourself over to something that's more powerful and then becoming stronger by it.
All in all, that's an incredible piece. I'll have to check that out. That was Thin Mountain or Thin Mountain?
Thin, as in not fat, but thin.
Thin, that's what I thought, but I wanted to make sure because you know how tricky my ears can be.
Yeah, I understand. I mean, yeah, there's nothing like Thin Mountain, so it's hard to compare something.
If you had to surmise the effects of Thomas Ligotti's writing on your personal viewpoint, a.k.a. philosophy of life, what do you think the ramifications of that have been?
I think he's had a very big impact. Impact on me and I guess my creativity and my own philosophy and worldview. There was a period where I took a bunch of different things and sort of opened myself up to a lot of different influences. Certainly Thomas Ligotti, The Fourth Way. Of course, I came from, you know, a pretty giant Satanism background, so that was in there too. Little things like Buddhism and Gnosticism, and yeah, obviously Lovecraft. What else? Oh, things I read like The Holographic Universe and Chaos Magic. Things I'd learned from learned about quantum physics and string theory and the Temple of Set, that sort of Setian philosophy paradigm. Really, all those things and probably a good deal more. Aleister Crowley, to a degree. Really, all those things influenced me, and you know, some became louder or brighter than other things. But yeah, definitely Ligeti. I mean, you know, the idea that that the universe was actively working against us. That, you know, that's very much a Ligetian kind of motif. And so, yeah, that right there, that's, that definitely influenced me.
If I could be so if I could be so bold to speculate, just from what I'm hearing today and you know, being as familiar with that as I am with the Cthulhu cult's overall philosophy, I would almost think that Ligeti's writing was the threading that kind of tied everything together for you.
Yeah, maybe, perhaps.
I mean, I picture it as like you know, a leather mask made from different pieces of different animals, and it being the actual
right.
leather cord that's stringing it all together.
Right. Yeah, yeah, you definitely have something there. It's a big piece, probably even larger than I assume, because I've lived with Ligeti for so long that it's like he almost becomes invisible as an influence after a while, because I'm so used to him. But yeah, late in high school I discovered Ligeti, and then I think I've told you this, or I've mentioned on the forum or in interviews, that early in my college career, I was experimenting here and there with LSD, and I think it was the very first trip on acid that I had that, you know, I got the sense, not in a literal way, but more of a, I don't know, metaphorical, symbolic way, I got the sense that God was talking to me. And he was imparting some wisdom on me, and that wisdom was that everybody suffers. And it took me a while before I figured out what that message meant or what it was is concerning. And, you know, I kind of mixed that in, I guess, with my Thomas Ligeti teachings, and it came up with that was basically our lot in life. And that was what human beings were put on this earth to do, was to suffer. And then I just, you know, as a, being a problem solver, I just kind of turned it over and over in my mind, like, you know, why is that? Why are we prone to suffer so much in this existence? Why is that happening? You know, who benefits? And then that just led one thing to another. So, and that, yeah, that became like the core, you know, philosophy of the cult. And then I found out later that a lot of those ideas meshed with the fourth way and things that Gurdjieff and Ouspensky and company were talking about. So it all fit together kind of neatly.
I couldn't imagine from an outside perspective trying to figure out how all of these different geometries mesh.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, you know, in some ways, if you were to take somebody who was like freshly interested in magic and or esoteric philosophies in general, and you were to point them in our direction, it would probably be hideous. And beyond the hideous, it would almost seem to not flow.
Yeah, it probably feels very disjointed and asymmetrical and incongruent to people. But for those wondering, I do assure you that when you put all the puzzle pieces together, you do have a complete picture of what we're doing and why we're doing it.
Right. Well, I think we're inside of our undiluted truth, and since I really don't know much about Legati, and I can only drill you so much.
Yeah, we can move on. That's fine. We've covered him.
I wanted to point out that there's been some major discussions going on, or at least attempting to go on the Cthulhu forum.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be really interested to hear other people's perceptions of these things, or their understanding of these things, and to see some, some real, I'm trying to think of substance as far as conversation goes on there. You know, a lot of what goes on is somebody finds something kind of cool, and they think they've got this neat angle on it.
Yeah.
And, you know, so they type up this little thing, and then everybody else goes, oh, yeah, and that's really pretty much it.
Yeah, a lot of times it does seem that way. Uh-huh.
So, I think it would be great if we could get, to come discuss on our forum. You don't have to be a member of the Cthulhu cult. You simply just need to register yourself.
Right. As a sex offender, I mean, as, register on the forum as a member of the forum.
Right. I mean, I challenge everybody that listens to this to, come and show us, if you think we're ignorant, show us why we're ignorant. If you don't understand it, come ask questions. Let us, let's put it to the green flame,
Right. Yes, everything must be put to the green flame, and it must prove to be unworthy or otherwise. And we definitely need more activity in the forum. I'm glad you mentioned that, because, wow, the forum has been around for a long-ass time, like 4 years, and, sometimes it just seems weird that we've got, X amount of members, like 3,000 or something. And then sometimes we only get like 5 posts a day, which sure is better than nothing, and I'd rather have 5 posts of substance than 50 posts of stupid nonsense. But still, there should be a lot more. There should be a lot more activity, a lot more going on, a lot more discussion, a lot more getting to something real. And, people helping each other, live better lives. I'm on there all the time. I know you are.
I am too.
And Ego Diabolos, another priest of Valet. He's on there frequently. We have a couple other members, Wizards of the Terrible Darkness, and just other cultists that pay attention to the forum and post on there. And really it's the core of our communication network is the forum. Anything that happens definitely gets announced on the forum. Anything that comes my way or someone else's way that's about Lovecraft or about magic or about anything the occult, the fourth way, anything that's going on in the world, it gets put on the forum in one way or another. And that's how you learn about everything. If people are looking for grottos in different parts of the world, you either post there, announcing that and looking for people, or you read the post looking for someone, or you post yourself saying, hey, I live in Kansas and really into the Cthulhu mythos and black magic, and I really want to meet people and do something in the real world, like face-to-face. is anyone else around? And sometimes there will be, and sometimes, you know, the thread may sit for a couple months and, you know, someone else may pop up or whatever.
Right. I mean, it would be all in all just cool to see some real exchange going.
Yeah, totally cool.
I mean, I think one of the most unique things is the Gear House, the forum. You know, it's a place where people are allowed, you know, their own opinions, and they're not going to be burned for them. I mean,
right.
You will have to, of course, you know, endure intellectual scrutiny.
Yeah.
But that's to be expected.
Yeah, exactly. It's not people just mindlessly patting each other on the back, saying like, you know, like, I like Cthulhu, you like Cthulhu too? Awesome. Like, you know, we're best friends now. You know, it's not like that. It's people do have disagreements, and there are things to be hashed out, problems to be solved. So it's very interactive and very, it can be comprehensive and very intellectual driven too. But at the same time, you know, it can be like, you know, someone just showing you artwork or a bit of writing that they did, and they want feedback, or they want, you know, they want some sort of recognition, and then, you know, they get that.
Absolutely. Sorry, I'm just finishing up my errands that I'm running today, so trying to mind my three or four different ways of attention at the moment.
That's cool. Also, in April, the forum will be ad-free, and I hope for the rest of its existence, it will be ad-free. It costs $7 a month to make the forum, because it uses the Pro Boards software, to not have any like banner ads or anything like that in the forum. So I'm gonna do my part and chip in my $7 for the month of April, and then I'm gonna open it up for people that want to donate, basically, or you know, contribute $7 to a month to make and to keep the forum ad free. So there won't be any advertisements when you log on and go through the forum day after day. And, you know, I'll probably set something up where, you know, if you do, you know, contribute the $7 for a month of ad-freeness, that, you know, you'll get mentioned on the forum. And, you know, maybe we'll do something kind of special in your honor or something. You know, it'll just be kind of cool. You'll get some sort of kudos or accolades or something noteworthy. So that would be kind of cool. And then we can just keep the forum advertisement free, you know, forever, which would be great because I remember when I was doing it, like, you know, 3 years ago, and I was, you know, I did it for like 6 months at a time, making the forum ad free. And which was very cool, but then 6 times 7, that was like 42. So basically, it's like $100 a year, and you know, that's not a lot, but it adds up. And I feel like I should constantly, you know, have that responsibility and burden. You know, especially since I'm just one of the many, many people that use the forum every day. So
right.
I'd like to
also make mention that we activated the live chat on the forum, and I can actually, with the exception of this next up and coming week, I can guarantee that I will be there during, I would say Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday between, 11 a.m. and probably 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'll be there regularly, so I'd be happy to, you know, answer any questions anybody has, or, you know, Mm-hmm. You know, I'll hold it just a basic conversation if you're interested. You
yeah,
know,
it's a cool feature. So I'm glad we have that now. Yeah,
yeah, it's
actually,
pretty cool.
Someone just on MySpace asked me, let me get it. Subject line is tax exempt. He's asking, how do I donate? So basically, I think eventually we're going to have a button or something on the website where you can, you know, click it and maybe pay by credit card, and then you'll get some sort of email receipt saying that your donation is tax deductible, and then your accountant will have the forms to do whatever. But until then, you can just write a check to Cult of Cthulhu Incorporated, and you know, if I get one or more checks, then I'll open a, like a special checking account just for the cult itself, and then we'll start generating some income, and then of course, because we are a nonprofit organization, we'll be putting 90% of that, whatever money we get, you know, directly back into the cult, and you know, increase our functionality, the activism, and just things, getting things going. You know, eventually we want to build one or more temples around the world for Cthulhu cultists to come and meet and congregate and worship. So yeah, if you're interested in doing that, especially since tax season is right around the corner, you know, feel free to do that.
I actually a while ago thought about doing a little bit of a charity drive for the Cult of Cthulhu and some of the things that we want to do. And my thought at the point in time, I've been practicing doing what's called 5-minute drawings, and basically, you know, sit down and do a drawing, and I got to try to get it done within 5 minutes. And my idea was that for a buck, I would do a 5-minute drawing for you, and that dollar would go directly to the cause of building temples or the Cult of Cthulhu conventions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you figure if 20 people buy a 5-minute drawing from me, well, that's you know, a pizza at one of the Cult of Cthulhu conventions.
That's right. Cultists have to eat too.
Yeah. You know. So, you know, the idea was that it would go back into the Cthulhu cult. You know, and hopefully in the future give some kind of a place where you know, cultists not necessarily you know, members of our ranks, but cultists in general. You know, they could come and they could study and they could, you know, worship. You know, physical locations are definitely our next goal.
Right.
It's just,
yeah.
You know.
We definitely have the internet thing down, but, yeah, eventually we want to go old school and go brick and mortar with this biatch. And, yeah, have physical temples in various cities. Yeah, unfortunately we don't have the recognition and the funding and all that yet, but I believe in the years to come we will, especially as we get closer to the end of 2012. I think that's going to be a make-or-break time for us, and that will fully solidify the Eon of Hulu.
So, yeah, anyway, if anybody's interested in those, the 5-minute drawings, and you want to donate the buck, just send me an email at theooze@fearthebeast.com, and we'll get it going.
Very cool. That sounds like a good plan. I'm still making my artwork as well. But lately I've been concentrating on abstract painting, but if someone wants me to paint something, you know, representative of, you know, Cthulhu or something, tentacles or, naked girl or something. I would know that.
Hold on a minute. Sorry, I just got home and my son's excited to see me.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of too bad anyone else called in, but oh well, that's the way the views roll.
Well, I want to thank you for you know, the introspect on Thomas Ligotti.
Oh yeah, my pleasure. I think you.
I will be looking up that.
It was a fun show to do.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I'd be interested now. I guess I'm going to try to get a hold of a couple stories.
Yeah.
And see what's going on.
Yep, definitely. I definitely recommend that. You've got his older volumes, which you could probably still find maybe on Amazon or something, and then you've got some newer compilations.
Get right.
Stores, you do libraries. Yeah.
Yeah. Funny. Regan, do you want to say hi to everybody?
No.
Say hi.
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 Hello.
He wants juice. He wants juice.
Get them while they're young.
Yes.
The Cthulhu Kool-Aid is being brewed as we speak.
Yeah, it's green and non-lethal.
Yes, green and non-lethal.
How much time do we have left in this episode, man?
Like 4 minutes, but we can end early. I mean, I've kind of run out of shit to say, so.
Yeah, well, the outro actually takes about a minute.
Okay,
so,
here we go.
You know,
no, so.
But in all, I want to thank everybody for listening, and next week is... the wild card week. I'll be out of town, so we'll have Jason Sorrell, or Ego Diopoulos, standing in at my place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And who the hell knows what you two will talk about.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I guess we'll just wing it. Whatever.
Yeah, well, I figured Jason Sorrell is just such a fascinating person to talk to. It's so very hard to stay constricted to one particular topic when you're talking to him.
Yes. He's very multifaceted. That's one of the things I like about him.
Yeah. I love his disturbed sense of humor. He's always got this kind of warped perspective of looking at things. And I mean that in a good way, Jason, because I know you'll listen to this.
Well, yeah, I think you're both a couple of sick bastards, so.
Well, that is for sure. That's undeniable.
I could be sick in my own way.
Yeah, you know, somebody has to play the good boy role.
Exactly. Yeah.
So,
by the way, there's probably, I should start counting down when I know, but there's probably about 3 or 4 more weeks before my real doll arrives. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, that'd be great. I can't wait to see the photography that comes out of that.
Oh, yeah. Lots of good stuff will be happening there.
Anybody who downloads this show, if you have a real doll or you've been interested in purchasing one, why don't you send us some, commentary as to, A, if you bought it, why you bought it, if you're thinking about buying it, why you're thinking about buying it, and what the first thing you'll do with it is.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely want to see how it feels, and I will be talking about my experiences with the real doll at length when it does arrive. So, good stuff.
Awesome. I'm excited about that.
I know you are.
Tentacles and real dolls. That should be very exciting.
Yep. That should be one of the titles of our upcoming shows in a couple of months.
It certainly should. After you've broken her in, huh?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, I guess we're probably just about there to where we can end the show. So if you want to click the outro button, we'll talk to everybody next week. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for listening to The Use. Opinions expressed by our guests or callers do not necessarily reflect those held by Venture or Beast or any institution associated with us. The Use does not condone any illegal or unethical acts. If you have been offended during the production of the show, we're sorry, but as the old expression goes, tough luck. Thank you, and see you next week.